So we didn't change anything in the way the lab worked normally, but it was a second room. So after the pathologist diagnosed the case, the algorithm took another look. And this was really a pivotal moment for us, where just 3 days after we deployed our first algorithm in Maccabi, it caught a misdiagnosis by a pathologist. So a case which was diagnosed as benign, and the algorithm correctly diagnosed it as cancer.
Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast, where you can learn from entrepreneurs and investors who are driving progress in healthcare and life science around the globe. Cancer diagnosis is a critical process that impacts millions of lives every year. Yet pathologists face immense workloads and complexity in providing accurate and timely results. This is where IBEX AI comes in. IBEX provides AI-powered cancer diagnostics to support pathologists and improve patient care. Their Galen platform uses artificial intelligence to detect cancer with clinical-grade accuracy, helping eliminate diagnostic errors, implement real-time quality control, and boost productivity. To tell us all about it, joining us today is Yossi Mosel, the co-founder and CEO of IBEX AI. He shares the inspiring story of how he and his co-founder went from having no healthcare experience to building a pioneering AI solution deployed in pathology labs worldwide. We'll learn about the aha moment, recognizing the potential for AI in digital pathology, their strategic data partnerships that enable training their algorithms, and the key milestones in their journey, like deploying their first AI algorithm at Maccabi in Israel. Yossi will also discuss IBEX's focus on integrating AI into clinical workflows, their expansion into regions like Wales, and the company's mission-driven diverse culture. I'm Alex Merwin from AWS, and your host for today's episode is Guy Spiegelman, the EMEA lead for healthcare and life science startups at AWS. I'm excited to hand it over to him so we can dive into this fascinating discussion on transforming cancer diagnosis with AI. Let's get started.
Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. I am super happy today to be here with Yossi Mosel, who is the CEO of IBEX AI. Yossi, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, and thank you for having me, Guy.
That's great. Listen, let's get right into it. Let me ask you to introduce yourself and, you know, what have you been doing till you founded IBEX, and then we'll get into IBEX itself.
Yeah. So before IBEX, I didn't do anything remotely similar to what I'm doing in IBEX. IBEX was my first healthcare company. Before that, I started out my career as a software engineer. And spent a few years doing that, moved into product management, and that kind of opened up a bit of kind of a wider scope into tech. And then I spent a few years actually doing something completely different. I was managing an environmental nonprofit, did that for a few years, and then came to a realization that I want to combine my tech background, but also with something that I feel has purpose.
I'm going to stop you right there, because I also manage a nonprofit. I didn't know we had that in common.
Okay. Which nonprofit did you manage?
It was called Present Tense. And what we did is help underrepresented founders in the Israeli startup ecosystem set up, join accelerators and set up startups. So we set up the first accelerator in Nazareth for Arab entrepreneurs. So really dealing with diversity and inclusion in 2012 and 13 before it became a buzzword. But it's interesting. I'm going to just double down on that. Sort of that nonprofit to then healthcare, because I can very much relate, but explain your journey for how that worked for you.
It was Israel's National Biodiversity Monitoring Program. I'm sure that blew you away. So this was a really very scientific program, but aimed at collecting data and improving decision-making and the way Israel's nature is managed. And I like doing that, but I think for me, what was missing is doing things on a larger global scale, and frankly, also with more resources to do so. So that's maybe, if you've been it, right, that's sometimes a limitation of the nonprofit world, that you're really, resources are come to come by, and it's difficult to do things at scale. And I felt I wanted to do something at larger scale. And also, I wanted to come back to tech. I felt that was really my comfort zone. That's where a lot of my experience came from, when I have unique advantage.
Okay. So tell me about the sort of how you came about founding IBEX? What does IBEX do broadly? We'll get into details, but just in, tell me a bit about the inception story.
Yeah, so first of all, the inception story had in that includes also my co-founder, Chaim Linhart. So around 15, the two of us were introduced by a mutual friend who's now the chairman of our board.
Okay. Who's that?
His name is Michael Lewin. And he recognized that we were both in a similar point in life, hungry to do something of our own, to start our own startup. And both, frankly, I think what we shared is, again, this kind of being mission-driven, wanting to do something that we felt was important. But we didn't really know exactly. We didn't start out from a specific problem we wanted to solve. But we did pretty quickly narrow down on healthcare, both because of the mission, but also because we thought Israel is a really good place to do that. There's the kind of this tradition of the tech and the ability to deal with, the AI, the machine learning tradition, but also the healthcare system. It's a very strong one, and which has been very early on in adopting or moving to digital records. So we saw an opportunity there, and we started exploring different directions.
Hold on, and is this co-founder also not from a healthcare background?
Not from healthcare background.
So both of you. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. It's a bit of a chutzpah here.
Chutzpah for the listeners, sort of cheek, using then daring and cheek together, if you like.
Yeah, I'll even add another. I'll explain in a moment, but we ended up doing a company which does image analysis, and none of us had any experience with image analysis before that. We didn't tell investors that when we were raising our
stock. Okay, interesting. So it's leaving out information rather than sort of...
but honestly, we convinced ourselves that we could do what it takes.
Okay,
but,
cool.
We didn't feel that specific piece of information would contribute to our pitch.
Yeah. Okay. You decided you want to found a company together. You looked at healthcare. You knew you wanted to do something. You thought Israel's great because of both technology powerhouse, but also a health system that has lots of records, longitudinal, sort of 20 years data, pretty well organized, structured data. What next? Like, how did you start to move towards digital pathology?
Yeah, so there was an aha moment. We met a friend of mine who's a pathologist at one of the hospitals in Israel. And he had ideas and things that we could do. But what really was the hot moment there that he showed us, he was really proud to show us that he has this thing called a digital pathology scanner. So this allows to do pathology, to look at like these slides on a computer screen. And I have to say, for us, the big surprise was that wasn't the normal way to do pathology, that actually what they do is look through a microscope. But that was when we learned of this, what was then a new technology coming into the market, land for the digitization of pathology. And kind of the aha moment was that even there were already hundreds of companies doing AI and radiology. We said, okay, why not do a company for AI and pathology? And what's interesting, was really, because we didn't understand the domain very well at that point. But what we set out to do is what the company is actually doing today. And what we set out to do is to develop applications to be used in the clinical practice of pathology, in the day-to-day practice of diagnosing cancer. And despite really going into a field where we at that point knew very little about, it is exciting. And that's what we are doing. Now just a bit to show that we weren't complete idiots at the time. The third employee in the company was Dr. Yudit Zalbank. She was the chief pathologist of Maccabi Healthcare Services in Israel and a very senior pathologist. And she's the chief medical officer of the company still.
Okay. So So Maccabi, for the listeners, is an HMO and health maintenance organization. I think it covers 2.5-3 million lives, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a fairly sizable, and chief pathologist coming over from that system, then you had the aha moment, we can do AI on this. There's already some great imaging companies in Israel as well. We know some of them. We've interviewed them here on the podcast. Did you look at the space? Was there, again, the scanners, I'm assuming, were from Philips that you were being used, or not only?
There were Philips, companies like Mamatsu, like, there's several vendors.
There's several. And they're just... viewing, but not adding any intelligence over it. When you started to build, were the competitors already in the space, others looking at the field, or were you pretty on your own?
Yeah, no, so there was a bit of a history. There were a few older companies doing kind of very basic image analysis. When we started, we were more or less on our own. But at the same point of time, there were others coming to similar realizations. So there were other companies being founded in this space more or less at the same time. So it was an important point in time for our field. Let's say that the first generation of companies was being founded, and some of them were still happily competing with.
Okay. And so what next? You decide to do this, you go and raise some funds.
So first of all, we signed an agreement with Maccabi.
Okay.
To give us access to data. So that was a very important point in time.
I'd like to double click on that if we can for the listeners, because a lot of our listeners are other sort of entrepreneurs, healthcare innovators, not necessarily in this space, but what does an agreement like that look like? I don't need to know numbers, but what are the kind of parameters in that sort of agreement look like for just to help our audience understand that a bit better?
Good question. I wish somebody would have given me a good answer before I started to negotiate the agreement. But the key questions here in this kind of agreement is how much of the data? So is it a limited data set, or you can really pick and choose everything? Another really important parameter, which really warrants some good thinking, is for how long?
Okay.
So not every healthcare organization can give you data indefinitely. And I can say that time periods that could feel like an eternity when you're starting the company and you think, yeah, they'll never run out. Will never run out, suddenly become, yeah, you can see them arriving. So the time period, obviously very important. And I think also in general, what's also really good about an organization like Maccabi is that the core data for us was the images of pathology slides, the images, the digital images. But it's also really good to get a lot of data around that. So all the clinical data that they have was also accessible to
them. And so then you can use that for training, for example.
For training, and also for if you have more clinical data, you can be a bit more smart about how you pick the specific slides from the full data set.
Okay. So it's also in terms of data selection, having the clinical data around it will help you choose the better data sets.
Yeah. Because people like to talk a lot about you have access to tens of millions of whatever.
Slides, whatever.
Yes. In our case, slides. We don't train our algorithms on millions of slides. We train them on thousands. But the important thing is really to pick.
The
right one, so you get a good representation of the problem set. If you just take data by weight, then some of the rarer phenomena, the rarer cancers in our case, they won't be represented there.
All right. So data selection, super important. Length of time you have the data. And then what are they're giving you this data? They're not giving it to you for free, I'm assuming.
That's something I'll have to keep.
Okay. Okay. No, I don't want to know how much or anything. Just in the, is it like just a fee, one off, or is it royalties, or is it this? If you don't want to go into it, that's fine. Or maybe you could, from what you've seen in other healthcare systems that you've gotten data from, what are the kind of categories?
So I'll say two. There's really, for us, there's like strategic agreements, strategic data agreements. So they're, it's data, but it's more than that. It's access to the lab and collaboration with the lab and unlimited access to data. So really this kind of very large scope agreement and this kind of strategic agreement. Of course, there's also what each the party giving the data, what it gets is more substantial. And then for us, we have a lot of kind of smaller data partnerships where we buy maybe, and here it's more like just buying.
Fee for the data. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's really super interesting. Okay. And then let's talk a little bit about fundraising. Full disclosure for everyone listening, I was at one of the venture capital funds prior to AWS that invested in Ibex. It wasn't my deal, but I feel like I need to say that. And hence I know Yossi for many years. But let's talk us through your first sort of Did you have an angel family and friends round? Did you go straight for pre-seed? How did that work in your own words?
So our seed was actually this is interesting because what got us off the ground was pre-seed even by a French investor called Comet, are part of AXA.
AXA, yeah.
And what was really important here, because Chaim and I know it's hard to tell, but we weren't 20 when we founded the company. We both had families and day jobs. And Comet gave us the opportunity to basically, we were entrepreneurs in residence. And it gave us the opportunity to spend a few months really figuring out what is it that we want to do. So that was really important. And really, after 6 months of working full time on what we want to do, we locked down completely on what's Ibex. And then with that came also the seed investment from Comet.
Okay. And so then you started to build a team, started to build product. And I'm assuming the first customer was Maccabi again?
Yeah. And here was a nice story. So we started working on prostate cancer. That was the first issue we started working on with from Maccabi. And we started doing that on January 1st, 2017. And in early 2018, we felt we had something which was ready, maybe not for prime time, but ready to try out in the lab. And we deployed it as a quality control mechanism. So we didn't change anything in the way the lab worked normally.
Yep.
But it was a second room. So after the pathologist diagnosed the case, the algorithm took another look. And this was really a pivotal moment for us, where just 3 days after we deployed our first algorithm in Maccabi, it caught a misdiagnosis by a pathologist. So a case which was diagnosed as benign, and the algorithm correctly diagnosed it as cancer.
Wow.
So.
Hold on, how did that make you feel?
Yeah, so it's interesting because it's mixed feelings, right? Because you know there's somebody there who got bad news, so you don't feel good about being happy. But you also understand, first of all, Edison is better off this way, even if they're not happy right now.
100%.
Yeah. And it gives you a very tangible sense of the importance of what we do. Yeah. Suddenly you feel, this is for real. And it was also the fact that it happened so quickly. That kind of was a strong indication that we're not on something that these kind of mistakes happen once a year or something like that. And since then, we have a lot of solid data backing that intuition that these diagnostic errors are not rare. But yeah, we were a small team. We went out to celebrate, I have to admit.
It's a big deal. Well, this, you introduced an innovation, wanting to create clinical impact, and very quickly you validated that, hey, you're doing something to help the healthcare system provide clinical value. That's a major deal, worth celebrating.
And I think it also shows something about kind of the ecosystem in Israel, that Maccabi were willing to deploy something which was still so experimental and willing to try it out and work.
So leaning into innovation, like really not, we see from different healthcare systems in the world, we have the ones that lean in and the ones that are like, listen, I'm going to just, I don't want to do this chronologically necessarily, but maybe let's talk about some experience. You've talked about Israel healthcare system. Where's another good healthcare system? Which other geography have you found to be good to work with, and maybe a geography that's been more challenging to work with?
So you're going to be surprised by my answer now.
Okay.
Which, I love Wales. Wales are great.
We have Wales, as in whale. I've got a whale on my arm here.
Wales, the country. So I've become I'm a bit of a Welsh nationalist. I've become since. Reminding everyone that Wales is a country. And the reason I do that is because Wales is the first country in the world that's deployed RAI throughout the country. So every NHS trust in Wales is using our technology to improve the quality of prostate and breast diagnosis there. And that was also was really because we visited, actually, in 2016, we paid the visit to the SWAB in Wales because they were one of the very first labs to digitize. And a few years later, we closed this loop and got to a point of a national deployment. And I think the lesson here about, again, leaning into innovation and wanting to do something special, what I've seen over time that sometimes the people who want to go faster and be more aggressive are people who feel they have more to prove.
Mm.
So you wouldn't necessarily, if I told you to guess which country was the first in the world to do, yeah, go nationally, you wouldn't guess.
You away. Wouldn't guess Wales. Yeah. Most people wouldn't even guess that Wales is a country. You're right.
Yeah.
So, and let alone being that first in innovation. Interesting.
Yeah,
and
but they've been very deliberate about planning this and funding this and really wanting to show that they can do something special.
And you work directly there, or do you have a partner, some sort of integrator partner, or is it you're working directly in Wales?
So in Wales, we're working directly, but we do like to partner.
Mm-hmm. And what does that look like, partnerships? So it's a good topic as well.
Yeah. So for us, partnerships have two goals. One is to improve customer experience. So everyone that knows anything about healthcare understands that algorithms are nice, but integration work. Okay. Right. And everyone, they do not want to complicate their workflow. They don't want to be working with multiple tools. They want to have kind of these integrated systems with different elements working together. So we partner with companies which are active in the digital pathology space, companies who own workflows. So this can be scanner companies, or some companies have just independent workflow or image management system. And we integrate into their system to give a better customer experience. And this is something that comes time and again from our customers. How do you integrate into my workflow? And if I ever become a healthcare investor, that's going to be maybe not the first question I ask, but the second question.
All right. So what's the first then?
I want to know what are you doing, right?
Okay. What's the innovation? And the second one is workflow. So it's the workflow stupid. Is that like the quote?
Workflow, and then let's say and economics, of course, as well, are also very. Right?
Mm-hmm. So what do you mean by
there's the clinical value. How do you embed yourself into a workflow and in a hospital, and how do you make money? These are the three key.
How do you make money, and how does the hospital make money, or do you have to think about that as well?
So typically for you to be able to make money, then you need to either save cost for the healthcare system or help them generate incremental.
And how's it worked for you?
So for us, it's really healthcare. It depends on the health system.
Yep.
Because the value of what we, and that's also an important lesson for healthcare innovation. It really depends on the health system.
So the unit economics of each healthcare system is quite different.
Yeah, but I can explain, because the value proposition of what we do, we help drive efficiency. So we've shown in studies that pathologists working with our system can be up to twice as fast as without. So that's your cost saving. But also what you'd say from a patient perspective, obviously what's a healthcare perspective, what's really important is that we improve diagnostic quality. So if you're selling to an HMO in Israel or NHS in the UK, then you can make this double case. We're improving efficiencies, but we're also saving you costs downstream by diagnosing cancer earlier. So the earlier you diagnose cancer, you reduce costs, and it's also an obvious goal for the healthcare system. So that's like the full case for what we're doing. But if you go to a private lab, and in the US, you have a lot of these, then of course they want to be high quality, their physicians, that they want to do accurate diagnosis, but they don't make more or less money depending on the quality of their diagnosis. So they're really the crux of the business case is around the efficiency gains, around the ROI.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes really, you need to, on a country and a
system
segment within the country, you really need to go deep and understand how do you make the economics work for the different providers.
Okay, I want to shift gears a bit and talk about other aspects of company building, and in particular, talent. How have you gone about building a team? What sort of emphasis do you place at all on culture? And how is that deliberate? Is it something that just happens? And perhaps if you have any stories, learnings from stuff that hasn't gone as well, and have you improved it? Only if you have, it's okay.
Yeah. First of all, I and I think as a team, we think a lot about culture, and culture at the end, it boils down to the sum of the people that you've hired. I think one advantage that we have in our domain, the kind of people who want to join a company like IBEX, then also their drive is they're also looking for this kind of
for purpose of this.
And you end up then, the team that you have is, for me, it's just people which are nicer to work with than, let's say, people who are maybe driven just by their compensation. Something else which is interesting in IBEX, we're, I think, one of the most gender-balanced companies in Israeli tech. We're about 50-50.
It's amazing. On the management level too?
Yeah,
you said you're chief medical officer.
I think here, it's not that we never made that decision. It has an impact on the culture, but it's also a reflection of the culture. And I think what also happens here is there's a positive feedback loop here. Because when women come to interview at IBEX, they notice how many women there are in the company, and it makes them more attractive place for them to work. And for us, that's a huge advantage because if you're more attractive to certain people, then you get to hire higher quality people. Mm-hmm. And in general, diversity is not, so we haven't set out diversity goals per se, but I think the culture does lead to diverse workforce. And diversity also, it has many dimensions.
Yep.
One of them is just people who think in different ways.
Okay. Talked about a bit about team. How many people do you have today, if you can disclose approximately?
We're 100 people.
100 people. And are you set to grow? Are you growing at the moment?
What we've always done in IBEX is grow carefully.
Okay.
And we grow together with the growth of the business and the speed at which the business is growing.
Mm-hmm. Any growing pains that you felt that did you experience, or because of the incremental nature, it just felt like a natural build?
I think regardless of at which speed you do it, then there's these certain inflection points where the way you manage the company changes. It doesn't matter. If you get there slower, maybe you have a bit more opportunity to learn how to do it.
Yeah.
But you still need to do it. And I think there's 30 people, you need to start breaking up into more kind of clear functional roles and understand whose responsibility. And somewhere along the line from growing to 30 to 100, you understand that you need to be much more explicit in telling people what you expect from them and how you set goals and objectives and how you measure that. We'd like to think that if everyone understands what we're doing and what we aim to achieve, then everyone will do the right thing. But that at some point,
you need a more formal business cadence.
Business cadence, metrics of business performance and things like that. And that is also a culture shift. The way I think about culture, maybe just going back to that.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah, it's something, I can tell you one thing I know for sure about culture. Culture is not set by putting signs on the wall.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, as I said, it's the people that you hire, it's the way, very important, the way the founders of the company, but all the management, the way they behave. But I think of culture, it's a bit like a person's personality. It's something which is formed. You don't form your own personality. It's somehow some of a lot of things forms your personality. But it doesn't mean you can't be intentional about it. You can reflect the same way as a person does. You can reflect about your personality.
Yep.
And then you can say, okay, these elements of my personality serve me well, and these don't. And these I need to change because I'm older now. Mm-hmm. I'm in a different point in life. And you can work on it, but it takes work. It's not just, you can't just, so this first act is introspection.
Yep.
What is my personality? What's serving me, what isn't, and then really work on it and change it. And again, that work is not, it's hard work. It's not putting a sign on the wall.
Yeah, no, I get that. Even though at Amazon, we have very distinct leadership principles and we hire by them, we review our performance by them, we refer to them, not infrequently. It's quite deliberate. But if it's not reflected in the day-to-day management and people, then it really doesn't mean much. So I think that's absolutely true. Look, we're coming towards the end. Just maybe like something about some sort of forward-looking. Are you riding the Gen AI revolution? Is that something that's occupying your teams? Are you already using it? Is it something for the future? Or how are you seeing this at the moment?
Yeah, so I think Gen AI could become relevant to what we're doing, but currently we're not deploying it. For us, really, what I spend a lot of time thinking about is how does IBEX become a large company?
Mm.
And I know, this is something I feel I know, there will be a large company doing what IBEX is doing. So pathology is going to be transformed by the use of AI. That's, for me, it's not a question.
It's not an if, but a when.
No, and I can tell it's going back to, we've seen it in several labs. If there's a reason, if there's any technical issue for they can't use AI, they don't go back to the old ways. They wait. So once they start using the AI, it's really addictive. It becomes, that's the way they want to deploy. And for me, that's an indication that eventually this is the way pathology will be practiced.
Yeah.
And so that I take as a given. I think IBEX is well positioned in this race, but I spend my time thinking how do we get there, and also just there's a lot of just day-to-day execution.
I hear you. And so last question is a bit of advice for our listeners. Actually, I'm going to say two last points. One is tips for the road for anyone, startup founders wanting to get involved with healthcare innovation. And two, this is your chance. You have an audience. If what are you looking for that maybe someone in the audience, if they can reach out and help you out, what would you be looking for? And feel free to think of anything.
So I think my advice for entrepreneurs is be very conscious of the way you think of debt, and debt in the very general way. So there's technical decisions that incur technical debt. There's people you hire are maybe very good but don't fit the culture, then you're incurring some debt there. If you're a healthcare mm-hmm. company, if you don't invest early, and there's some unique elements to a healthcare company, such as your quality system, the way you address regulatory, if you don't start tackling those things early, you incur debt. And there's no avoiding. You will incur debt when you start, because you don't have the resources to do everything well from day one. You need to focus. But it is really important to be conscious of what you're doing. Where are you incurring debt? And when is the right time to start paying off that debt? Because, these things can also come back to bite you in the wrong moment, I think.
That's a good one. And then what are you looking for?
It's a general advice for life.
Yeah.
What are we looking for? The main focus of IBEX now is we're just deploying our system more in hospitals and labs, a big push in the US.
So if anyone's out there, especially in the US, they're looking to digitize what they're doing in digital pathology, they can reach out to you.
Reach out to us. They can partner with us.
Fantastic.
Can join the journey.
Elsie, thank you very much. I certainly learned quite a few things from our talk today. Maybe see you in Cardiff. So thank you very much. And this has been a great talk. So thanks for participating today in the AWS Healthcare Innovation Podcast.
Great. Thank you, Guy.
Thanks for joining us today for the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. If you want to get in touch with AWS, please check out our show notes where you can find a link. If you enjoy the podcast, the best way to support us is to share it with your colleagues and friends. We also really appreciate your reviews and ratings wherever you listen to podcasts. We love hearing feedback from our listeners, so please don't hesitate to get in touch. Again, you'll find all the details in our show notes. See you next week.